Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Red Sox here on the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Gabrielle, founder of Girl at the Game. And tomorrow, the Locked On Podcast Network is partnering with the Draft Network to cover the NFL Draft live. Get insight and analysis from Locked On local experts and the Draft Network's national experts. Subscribe to the Locked On NFL YouTube page to watch live for three-day coverage of the NFL Draft April 29th through May 1st. It's 11 p.m. on Wednesday night, April 28th, and the Red Sox have just pulled off a two-game series sweep of the New York Mets, and more importantly, Jacob deGrom. They won tonight's game 1-0. It was the first 1-0 victory they've had in over 2 years. And to break down this game in its entirety, I am joined by my friend and fellow Girl at the Game, Elizabeth Muratori, who is an editorial producer for Major League Baseball. She contributes to GirlAtTheGame.com. She is a good friend of mine and a wonderful baseball mind and a lifelong Mets fan. And we're going to talk about all of it. Okay. This is a treat, though not under the best of circumstances. Elizabeth Muratori is back on the podcast because I actually realized you've been on Locked On Red Sox before. Elizabeth is an editorial producer for Major League Baseball. She's also a contributor to Girl at the Game. She is the newsletter editor of the Internet Baseball Writers Association of America's amazing newsletter. And she is the co-host of Cohen's Corner Pod, which is a New York Mets podcast. And she's my friend, and she's a wonderful human being. And I'm so glad that she's here with me, even under these circumstances.
Yeah. Happy to be here, Gabrielle. You know, happy to budge. It'll help get any aggravation or frustration I feel. You know, it's always good to talk to another human. I feel like even after the worst of games, it's still better to, like, talk to someone else, even if that someone else happens to be a fan of the team that just won the game. So happy to be here.
This was really just a pitcher's duel.
It was basically like Jacob deGrom versus Mets offense. And, like, I feel like it's hard to say. I mean, you know, I feel like it's frustrating because there's been a lot of seasons where, you know, particularly in 2018 when deGrom had an amazing year and the Mets didn't really hit all year, I felt like I was really just watching the game for his stats and not really caring that much if the Mets actually won a game, because I knew in 2018 they weren't going to be that competitive. And, you know, sure enough, it worked out that he had a great season that year, obviously won the Cy Young. And I guess the frustrating thing is I really hoped to not be doing that in April of this year, just because of, you know, the off season and everything that has happened over the last few months with the Mets, hopefully, you know, turning over half their roster. I really hoped to not be, like, watching DeGrom starts in April and just looking for the silver lining of him pitching well. But unfortunately, I feel like mentally that's where I'm at right now, is watching their starts, like, expecting he's going to lose, and then just being happy that he still looks great out there. Even on a night when, you know, he clearly wasn't his dominant self, but what makes him so great is that, A, his secondary stuff is still strikeout worthy, and B, you know, he's mentally tough enough to, you know, even if he gives up a run, which he gave up, you know, the two hits he gave up in that second inning were solid hits. They weren't cheap. But he mentally bared down after that and was able to get through six innings. And I wasn't even surprised, honestly, after they took him out after six, because, you know, to the Mets bullpen's credit, the Mets bullpen has been really great this year. And you haven't really noticed it, because a lot of times they're pitching in, you know, losing situations when these guys are throwing these shutout innings. So I don't think that's really gone super noticed. But, yeah, definitely not the most offensive firepower we've ever seen in the game of baseball, the series.
No, definitely not. I mean, tonight the Red Sox, if you can call it this, the Red Sox outhit the Mets 4-2. Impressive pitching from both sides. I mean, it was just that DeGrom got unlucky with, like, that one, what was it? Christian Vasquez had an RBI to drive in Xander.
I think
I
it was
Devers.
No, it was that so it was Xander. He had the first hit off DeGrom.
Oh,
it was
okay.
A double. Christian Vasquez hit another double
right,
to drive
yeah.
in the only run of the game. So
right.
you know, like you said, was DeGrom's most recent start before this, was that the 9-inning, 15 strikeout game against the Nationals?
It was. And you know what's funny is like I almost felt like there was so much hype going into this game after that last start that not I feel like as a Mets fan I'm used to just anticipating jinxes, whether it's from like their announcers or just from the world in general, but I like had a feeling that this start just was, I mean, there's no way this could have lived up to his last start unless he pitched a no-hitter, which is always unlikely even with the greatest pitcher in the world on the mound. So I kind of had like a sneaking suspicion that, I mean, he was either going to gasp, give up a run, or that it just wasn't going to be a good game. And unfortunately, my suspicions were confirmed, even though, you know, like I said, he didn't have as overpowering, especially fastball command. I feel like I've watched so much of DeGrom over the years that I feel like I can always tell right away in like the first inning or first few batters if he's going to be, you know, one of those amazing dominant nights or if it's going to be a bit more of a battle. And, you know, even in that first inning when he got through the 1-2-3, he struck out a guy, but his fastball command definitely wasn't as pinpoint as it could be. He left a few, I mean, the Sox swung at some pitches up out of the zone, but there were also several fastballs, like, way out of the zone that I think he just, like, missed on throughout the game. So, you know, definitely wasn't his best ever. But, like I said, I kind of anticipated somewhat of a letdown just because I feel like there's almost more hype going into this DeGrom start than I've, like, almost ever seen just because Black Friday was so amazing. And, you know, in some ways, I feel like the halo of Black Friday, just because there hasn't been a ton of Mets offense to celebrate, the fact that they won that game 6-0 almost seemed like a miracle. So, yeah, definitely not as heroic seeming as last Friday's outing, but obviously he still pitched really well. I don't even know how to, like, describe Mets offense right now because I think Steve Cohen tweeted recently that, like, offense implies actually hitting, which they're not doing. Something like
oh, no.
Yeah, so, which I'm sure it was a joke, but, you know, I don't know. I'd be curious to wonder what's going through his mind. But, yeah, definitely hard to find silver lining from this game other than DeGrom still pitched great. And, you know, that's always a good sign because at least he's still good. So that's nice.
I hate to throw this stat at you, but this was the Red Sox first one.
I saw that. I know exactly which tweet you're going to say, but go ahead.
What, Tom Karen's tweet that this is the first 1-0 win by the Red Sox in over 2 years?
Since, like, was it since the last time they faced DeGrom? Or there was some stat I saw where, like, they had some game where they hit, like, fewer, I don't know. But I saw a lot of futile hitting stats from both teams this evening, so.
Yeah, it's, I don't even really have words because honestly, if, you know, I mean, it's not even like me calling myself out because if anybody listened to my series preview episode with our Locked On Mets host, Ryan Finkelstein, I was worried that the Red Sox were going to get swept in this series.
Oh, you shouldn't have worried.
I know, that's what he told me. And all night
like,
long and last
about
night.
Adam, I was like, don't worry.
I think your first text to me of the night was, you don't need to worry about Ottavino. Mets cannot hit at all. And then like a few minutes later, literally, and then in all caps, at all.
I mean, I wasn't wrong, unfortunately.
No, you weren't wrong. And neither was Ryan. But I just, you know, if you think about it this way, like Garrett Richards before this week was arguably the most fragile starter in the Red Sox rotation. And he had a 10 strikeout game last night and he didn't walk a single batter. And he's never done that before in his career. He had double-digit strikeout games, I think, 6 times in his career. His career high is 11. But every single time he hit double digits on the strikeouts, he had walked at least one batter. And so last night was his first time with double digits and no walks. No one saw that coming. Like, that was impossible to foresee. And I know that in the past, he's had some really nasty stuff in his pre-Red Sox days. But he hadn't really shown that until last night. And so I was like, Ryan, you know, we're bringing out Garrett Richards in the first game and DeGrom is the pitcher in the second. And he was trying to reassure me. And like me being a psychotic Red Sox fan, like I'm just always worried. I was worried until the last pitch of the game. I realized at the end
really?
Of the game that I had
really?
Not been
you
breathing.
Nervous? I'm surprised.
look, you know, you're a Mets fan. Yeah, I'm a Red Sox fan. There's like decades of ingrained trauma. Like you're born into trauma when you're a fan of one of these teams. And I'm always nervous. Like we had, there was a game a couple weeks ago against the Orioles and it was the Orioles and the Red Sox were up 10-1. And I was still nervous. And you know what? I had I had good reason to be because in like one inning they made it 10-7.
Oh wow, really?
So I had good reason. Like that's what I'm saying is a 1-0 game. The Red Sox hadn't won 1-0 in over 2 years. So between that and the fact that like you do actually have good hitters in your lineup, even if they're not currently hitting. You can say that about the Red Sox, too. I mean, they only managed 4 hits tonight. JD Martinez, I'm pretty sure he hasn't had a hit the entire series.
I don't think so. I don't think he had a hit yesterday.
I mean, he was 0 for 4 tonight, and I'm pretty sure he was 0 for 4 last night, too, and he had 3 strikeouts tonight. Look, anyone can get you. That's what they always say.
That's true. Yeah, I have to say, I mean, he looks good in left field. It's interesting because I feel like it's not only, you know, pitchers suddenly transforming into Cy Young against the Mets, but it's also, like, fielders transforming into Roberto Clemente against the Mets as well. Like, I mean, he threw someone out at home, or I forget exactly what happened. I'm already trying to put the series behind me, but I was impressed with his arm in left field. I know he hasn't played there a ton in his career, so who knows? Maybe he'll be seeing more of that in other National League games they play this year, because I guess, you know, if he hits, aside from the series, well, I'm sure they'll want to keep his bat in the lineup to some degree when the Red Sox play interleague games.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't the first game that he's played, aside from this series, this isn't the first series in which he's played a defensive position. I'm trying to think. I think last week he played left field also. And I mean, he does actually kind of have a little bit of a cannon for an arm.
Yeah,
but The thing in the past that's been the problem with him is that 2 years ago, 2019, any time that he would play the outfield, he would then sit on the sidelines for a few days with back spasms. And so this whole thing that Cora was trying to avoid with him was injury because, you know, they need his bat. But for one thing, he didn't hit like at all this series. So there's that. And he also played some pretty good defense. So now it's kind of this 180 from the 2019 situation of like, well, they were trying to preserve him defensively by having him DH so that he'd be able to continue to hit. And this series, he played great defense and he didn't hit at all. but you know, the thing with him is that, you know, he's a little bit older. He's like what, 33 now.
And it seems like he's been in the league forever. He's one of those
guys. He's like, one of those guys, you know, I feel like I can't remember baseball without him.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's funny also because I'm not sure if it was the longest at bat of the game, but Nick Pavetta had a 10-pitch at bat against DeGrom.
It was the longest. It was not only the longest at bat of the game against DeGrom, it was the longest at bat of the entire season against DeGrom. And it was 10 pitches to Pavetta. I was like, all right, can we strike this guy out already? Like, what's going on? He wasn't even getting, like, great swings. He just kept fouling off, like, weakly to like right or left, like down the line. I was like, oh my god, like, is this gonna turn into a leap? I was honestly thinking, I was like, is this gonna turn into a Luis Guillorme 22 pitch situation? Because if so, like, I did not sign up for that from Nick Pavetta against my pitcher this evening. But it ended at 10, and then we all went on with our day.
I mean, honestly, it's funny because like Eduardo Rodriguez hates hitting. He is a terrible hitter. He would not last 10 pitch at bat. Like, there would be no 10 pitch at bat for him. He's like,
don't even swing.
Oh yeah, or it's like, you know, he weakly, like, it's like a weak comebacker to the mound that just like dribbles through the grass, or like he just twists himself up swinging. It's funny because he hates hitting. But Rick Porcello, funny enough, who was on your team last year?
Yeah,
last year. And I think he's actually an unsigned free agent now.
Did anyone sign? I don't remember. I feel like I would have heard if he had signed with the team, just because, you know, through the grapevine of Mets Twitter, I feel like I always see when former Mets sign places, and I don't recall seeing that announcement. So I'm not sure if he's with the team. I don't think he is at the moment.
No, he's currently a free agent.
He didn't have a great year last year, but yeah, I feel like he could give someone something. I mean, I don't know. Did the Orioles need him? I don't know how good they're pitching been so far this year. I'm not saying they're going to sign him, but I'm surprised that he hasn't at least been given a shot by any team. But that could change soon. You never know with injuries.
Yeah, like the Yankees will grab him.
I don't know. Yeah, I find that hard to believe, but you never know.
I mean, look, the thing with Rick Porcello is that he's not always effective. In fact, oftentimes he's completely ineffective. But the one thing that he has going for him always is that he is a consistently healthy pitcher who will go out there and eat innings for you. And in 2019 with the Red Sox, I'm pretty sure he had the worst ERA of like any starting pitcher for a solid portion of the season, if not the entire season. He still got like a ridiculous amount of run support. So for a large portion of that season, he had a better record than Chris Sale, even though Chris Sale was having like 17 strikeout games. I mean, Chris Sale was having DeGrom games, and Rick Porcello, though, was getting three times the run support per start. But Rick Porcello would go out there and he would still pitch five or six innings. And even if it wasn't super effective, he was actually healthy enough to be able to go out there, which is honestly the basic reason why I thought the Red Sox were going to give him a 1-year deal in 2020, just because they needed somebody healthy. So I'm surprised that he is currently still a free agent.
If you're looking for a great snack to sneak into the ballpark, Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar brand on the market. They have 18 amazing flavors, including nut and nut-free flavors. Their bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew, but each bar is low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. So they're great if you want to lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. These are great for the keto diet if you're diabetic. These bars taste great without any of those hidden sugars or preservatives that make them bad for you. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com.
I need to ask you about this quote because I think you're going to have some feelings on this. Nick Pivetta during the post game, like right before we started recording, said, quote, "I'm just as good as DeGrom." And my take, for sure, obviously, is that it would take a lot more overall for Pivetta to actually be comparable to DeGrom, like Cy Young DeGrom. But tonight, Nick Pivetta was as good as Jacob DeGrom. Your thoughts?
That's interesting. I'm curious to hear like what he was asked that, where he gave that response. I mean, you know, I'm not gonna like get mad at him. He, if you want to be like a major league starting pitcher, you have to be confident. And I'm sure he believes that he can be an amazing pitcher. He is talented. I don't really know like what to say other than, you know, obviously he doesn't have the track record that DeGrom does, but I appreciate the confidence. And you know what? He pitched a hell of a game. Like, good for him. Hopefully he has a good season for his own sake. I don't really know. I'm curious to see, like, what was packaged around that quote, because I feel like there must have been some additional context. I'm sure he didn't say that unprompted. I didn't, you know, watch his post-game interview. But, yeah, I mean, I appreciate the confidence. Like I said, I tip my cap. He pitched a really good game. The Mets obviously couldn't hit him. So I'm sure he's feeling great about himself. And that's great for him. Yeah, he didn't have a good year with the Phillies last year. I don't even know what his ERA was with the Phillies, but before he traded over to the Red Sox. Yeah.
I'll look it up real quick, but I will say that I have friends who are Phillies fans, and Mitch Bernstein, who is a wonderful radio host in the Philly area, whose show I was actually on last night. He tweeted at me during the game being like, "Where the hell was this Pivetta last year? Like, everyone's talking about how Chaim Bloom fleeced the Phillies, you know, with this deal." So in Philly in 2020, in 5 2/3 innings of work, he had a 15.88 ERA. His ERA in a single season between 2017 and in the first half of 2020 with Philadelphia had never been below 4.77. With Boston in 2020, in 10 innings of work, he had a 1.8 ERA. And now in 20 2/3 innings of work over four starts, he has a 3.48, 18 strikeouts and 14 walks, which isn't great, but there was like one game where he was just walking like literally everybody and their mother. So I, you know, like small sample size, the same way 2020 was a small sample size. But I think Nick Pivetta, kind of a similar situation with Andrew Benintendi, where like he just had totally lost his mojo where he was and really needed a change of scenery, because ever since he's gotten here, he has been really good. I'm pretty sure he won his first five starts with the team. It might have actually ended up being more, but you know, Chaim Bloom kind of has this talent for picking those diamonds in the rough. And I think Pivetta was one of the guys that he said that he's had his eye on for a really long time.
Yeah. I mean, after the Red Sox, I know obviously they didn't have a lot of pitching for most of last year. So, you know,
we had no pitching. Like don't sugarcoat it, Elizabeth. We had no pitching.
I know. It's hard to judge, honestly. I mean, knowing, like, I've watched almost all the Mets games this year, and there's been some futile offense performances. This was definitely the worst one since they didn't score any runs. But, you know, it's hard to judge if, like, if they were just unusually inept at the plate or if Pivetta pitched the game of his life. His control wasn't, like, pinpoint, but he definitely looked good. You know what? I appreciate the confidence. Clearly, I feel like you hear it a lot from pitchers around the league when asked. You know, I've seen some interviews with, like, other pitchers when asked, like, you know, what's one pitcher that you love to watch or that you wish you could, like, model your game after? DeGrom gets brought up every single time. And so these guys are looking up to him. I mean, he's clearly setting a great example for the rest of the league. So I appreciate him being – the fact that he's good enough to kind of be that example that other pitchers want to achieve that level of, you know, mental fortitude and just complete control over the body and over the pitches they're throwing. I appreciate it. I'm not going to, like, overanalyze it. I don't think he's, like, sticking it to the Mets. By the way, one thing I did want to ask, I know that you, I said this to you earlier, but you saw that like crazy tweet from like that Red Sox staff Twitter account earlier today about how the Mets almost traded DeGrom to the Red Sox. Like,
I did. And before. It would have been extremely Mets. At the same time, though, I will say the Red Sox historically do not have a great record of developing pitchers. And it is very interesting to imagine what it would have been like if they had been handed a young Jacob DeGrom. The reason that a homegrown pitcher like Tanner Houck, who is currently at the alternate training site here, you know, preparing for AAA ball, is the reason that he's been such a buzzworthy guy, aside from the fact that his debut last season was so good, is because he's a rarity. I mean, him, John Lester, Rich Hill, you don't get a lot of homegrown pitchers here. I mean, even Pedro, who like is known for being with the Red Sox.
Yeah, who was at the Expos before that.
Right, and the Dodgers. But he's not a homegrown guy. I mean, most of them aren't. The Red Sox, I mean, this is how they constructed the 2018 World Series team. They sent away their entire farm system to get Chris Sale and Craig Kimbrell. They paid David Price like $200+ million. At the time, it was the most lucrative pitching contract in baseball history. You know, they got Rick Porcello from the Tigers, and none of those guys were homegrown.
Really thought about that. That's true, because there's not a lot of, like, marquee – you're right. I hadn't really thought about that, because I feel like with the Mets, you always think of their homegrown pitchers.
But, you know, back to DeGrom for a second, because this blew my mind. For starters, Nick Pivetta's at-bat off DeGrom, his 10-pitch at-bat – the longest at bat ever by a pitcher off DeGrom. Carlos Martinez and Clayton Kershaw each had 9-pitch at bats off of him. I guess these stats are more shocking to me because I'm in the American League and therefore there's not a lot of pitcher versus pitcher conversation.
That's true. Like the whole extra element that you don't even see.
Right. Like I never have to think about these things, but also it's the longest at bat by anyone this year against DeGrom. Isn't that wild? I mean, I guess it's actually not that wild because DeGrom just strikes everybody out. So it's actually not as surprising as you would think.
I feel like out of his starts this year, this is definitely the one that he's looked the most hittable. And he didn't even give up that many hits. But it wasn't surprising to me. I mean, the Sox have been a tough team, you know, it seems like, against everyone this year. And they fouled off a lot of balls against him this evening where, you know, he threw 96 pitches in 6 innings. He could have gone a 7th. Honestly, I wasn't even mad that they took him out because he looked a little bit tired and – they were losing anyway. Like, I don't know what they would have gained even by getting another scoreless inning out of him. Nick Pivetta, Silver Slugger candidate. You heard it here first. He didn't even get a hit, but
If they gave out silver sluggers for just like really good plate discipline,
Yeah,
like Pagano would
exactly.
be a
Like, nice.
win. Yeah.
Luis Guillorme, silver slugger, just for that spring training at that alone. Like, I'm spring training silver slugger, definitely Luis Guillorme.
I assume you didn't see this, but Alex Verdugo had a ridiculous at bat against the Twins in the final game of the series. And I believe it was something like 13 pitches or something.
Wow, that's impressive.
And it ended with him with a bases clearing double, I want to say.
Wow.
And I believe it tied the game. I'm a little bit fuzzy on the details because the reason I was so anxious about Ottavino coming into to the eighth inning tonight is because Ottavino was the one that cost them the game in that game that
Oh, okay.
ended their win streak, cost them the series sweep, et cetera. But yeah, Alex Verdugo had a ridiculously long at bat in this series. You probably want to start betting on the Red Sox. They are 16-9. No other team in the American League has more wins than they do. And BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on the Red Sox and all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. This week has tons of sports action on the go as the NFL draft is on and the Kentucky Derby is back as the first leg of the Triple Crown begins this weekend. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. When you go to the website or use that mobile device, you'll receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Before we end today, we just need to talk about Francisco Lindor getting booed at Citi Field and like how much he's been struggling. I felt so bad. I that Marwin Gonzalez,
Oh, that was the
leaping.
best win he's had in like several days.
I
And of
know,
course, he
and
got the
that's why
glove.
I texted you saying I felt so bad because it was an amazing, amazing, amazing catch. Like you,
Yeah,
I
it
assume
was.
you that was like un like my jaw is still kind of open, just of
It was an
kind of
incredible catch. It really was.
I'm still a little bit in disbelief. But Lindor, like he's hitting 203 now in 69 at bats, one home run, three RBI, zero stolen bases, a 578 OPS. He is not living up to the lofty standards that he has set for himself in his past seasons. But I still can't believe he's getting booed.
Well, like I told you, like the Mets, this has happened with like marquee free agents, and that's the thing. It's unfortunately, it's not just Yankee fans who boo their own players. Okay, it's probably just more of a New York thing than we'd like
Oh
to
no,
admit.
Red Sox, there's a
But
certain subsect of Red Sox fans that boos their own players. Ryan and I actually talked about that the other night with our Locked On Red Sox, Locked On Mets crossover, just because I had an interesting, I want to hear your thoughts on this. So I was thinking about Twitter and how often fans, air out their grievances by replying to their favorite team's social media accounts. And I was saying to Ryan how if you reply to the Red Sox and say, like, I'm still mad at you for trading Mookie Betts, for example, like John Henry is not going to read the Red Sox Twitter
Right.
notification. So, like, you're not actually getting anywhere. You're just harassing the poor social team. And as
Right.
someone who is on a social team, like, it's not fun to read unfun replies. Like, I had some in my mentions tonight for Locked On. But if you go to a game and you are booing a player, I mean, yeah, they're going to hear it. So that sucks for them. I feel for them. But also, your team ownership and your team's front office might hear it. And so, in a weird, twisted way, and I'm not excusing it, I still don't agree with booing, but in a weird way, if you boo somebody at the ballpark, there's actually more of a chance that your team's ownership and decision makers are going to see how you feel. There's way more of a chance of that than them
That's
seeing it
true.
from what you say on social media, which again doesn't excuse the behavior. And still, I'm still kind of shocked after how much I saw Mets fans like bugging Steve Cohen to get the extension done before the season started.
Yeah, that's interesting. I had never really thought about that, but you're right. I mean, the ownership slash front office people are probably watching every game, so they're going to hear it. You're right. And I guess the thing what makes me sad about people booing Lindor is, I can kind of understand if you feel like a player really, isn't running balls out or is like being lazy and, they're not going after like fly balls or letting things drop that they shouldn't be. If you feel like someone's being just lackadaisical, I can more understand booing if it's apparent. But it makes me sad about Lindor because I don't get that sense from him at all. He's struggling at the plate, but he is not, you know, he's not being lackadaisical. He is, you know, trying. He's making all the plays in the field. He made a fantastic double play last night. You know, he is basically kind of the on-field coach, it almost seems like. You see him talking to the pitchers when there's a guy at second trying to, you know, figure out what they're going to do with the runner and how they're going to hold him on. And I get the sense that he, I don't know how he may have mentally prepared for struggling this much, but, I mean, you know, he even said it himself that he was never booed in Cleveland ever. And I was even thinking earlier, I was like, I bet every single person on this Mets roster has been booed at some point, probably except Jacob DeGrom. I mean, I can't fathom an instance, honestly, in his entire career where he would have been booed. Everyone else probably has been. So the rest of them are probably used to it to some degree, especially the players who have been here for a few years. But, you know, at least for me, it's frustrating because, you know, Lindor signed, he clearly wanted, yes, he was given a huge contract off offer, but he clearly, part of him at least, wanted to be here. And I feel like booing someone who is, you know, plays as hard and as enthusiastically and with as much joy as he does is makes me a little bit sad. And so, like I said, I don't really, like, condone it, but I can more understand for players that, A, are just making, you know, bonehead plays in the field that they shouldn't be, or just not running things out. But Lindor is not that player. He's struggling at the plate, but he is not, like, you know, he's not, he's putting in a lot of effort, in, especially in the field. You can see it. And so, but on the other hand, you know, unfortunately, this is part of playing baseball in New York, is that if you struggle, you will get booed. And it's not, I'm not really condoning it, but it will happen because, especially Mets fans, you know, I was telling you this earlier, I feel like it's not like Steve Cohen promised Mets fans all of this stuff, but I feel like Mets fans internally promised themselves a lot with this ownership change and all the players that we thought we were going to get and didn't end up getting. And so I feel like they're just getting a little bit frustrated. And it is early, but it's almost the end of April. And I just feel like the struggles are coming from, or the boos are also coming from the fact that for the first time, I think in a long time, there's genuinely high expectations for the Mets this year. And we're not really used to that. We're not used to, like, expecting to be good. I mean, that's why I told you, I'm used to watching DeGrom starts, and that's, like, the highlight of the week because it's DeGrom, and I'm not, like, expecting the Mets to win. You know, that's why I watched the entire 2018 season. And, you know, I just feel like somehow or other, a flip needs to be switched for the offense, whether it's just figuring out how to slap balls the other way and not try to pull everything, or just getting better barrels on, because they're not even making good contact right now. They're not even hitting, like, balls to the outfield for most of the game. So, and the thing is, it's also not just Lindor. The whole team is struggling with hitting. So if you're going to boo someone for struggling at the plate, it's not really fair to single him out when he's doing no worse than most of the rest of the team. So yeah, I guess that's all I have to say about people booing Lindor. I think it's a shame this early on because, again, he clearly plays with so much heart and seems to be a really great person and a great leader off the field. So I just hope he can figure it out so that he doesn't have to keep hearing it, because unfortunately nothing I say is going to change people's minds who are going to boo him. So I just hope that he and the team can turn it around where that he doesn't bear the brunt of it.
Yeah, I mean, he had a quote tonight. He said about being booed, he said, "It's interesting, it's funny, and it sucks." And I totally get all that. And I 100% agree with you, too, that when somebody's trying really hard and the results just aren't there yet, I just feel like it's so much more uncalled for to boo them. You know, it's not like he's not trying. It's not like he's still not making good defensive plays. It's just that something hasn't clicked for him yet.
Right. Yeah. No, and that's the thing. It's like, I feel like Lindor, you know, he's the type of player that you can clearly see he's putting his all into everything. I'm like, I can't fault the effort, but unfortunately, like, the attitude of fans, you know, in New York and elsewhere, like you were saying, in Boston too, people are going to boo players that struggle. And there's probably also not that many people booing, but because there's so few people at the stadium, if there's, like, a section of 100 people booing, you're going to hear it. And so I feel like it's probably being overblown how many people are booing him. It's barely audible, but unfortunately, barely audible is still audible.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the Yankee suck chants were louder than the Lindor boos.
100%.
So this has been your post-game episode of Locked On Red Sox, recapping the New York Mets two-game series. The Red Sox head to Texas to face the Rangers at their brand new ballpark, and I will be doing a series preview with Locked On Rangers host Bryce Patterick tomorrow, so stay tuned for that. And when you're done with the Red Sox, get all the other sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. Don't forget to follow Locked On Red Sox on Twitter at @LO_RedSox. I'm at @GFSTARR1. Don't forget to follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you get podcasts, so you never miss an episode. And as always, go Red Sox.